I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
He is, yeah. So the Varl are an entirely male race, which why it's like, it's not explained, but like sometimes I'm like, oh, maybe he was just too shy to put boobs on or whatever when he's like shaping the clay. He's too squeamish.
Yeah. Well, should I? he's got one in front of him. It's like, looking around, he's like got the little like perfectly sculpted boobies on her, and then like the loom mother walks in, she's like, hey, what are you working on? Nothing. Like,
yeah, somewhere there's like the creation of life putty set of boobs in the banner's bag. Banners here. The internet's number one fake saga podcast returns despite the sun having stopped in the sky. I am the latest in a long family line of skilled archers, Peter O'Donohue, and my bannermen are...
It's Saga Boy, Ethan.
And? No, we made the wrong decisions, and Jamie has been permanently killed until we start a new game.
Oh, right, yeah.
Right, yeah.
We had positioned him in a place where he could get like a good hit off, but we forgot that he loves autoerotic asphyxiation, so exactly. He just autoerotic asphyxiated himself.
Yeah, exactly. Because like with the dialogue options early on, you're supposed to say like, no, give me your belt. But he's like, no, I need to hold my pants up. And like, we know that's not why you need it. But then because we're just like, well, we'll see what happens. We'll see what ending we get if we let Jamie keep his belt. And then, of course.
That's the one that you get.
Yeah. There he goes, yeah. So, today, as you would have seen already, today's Banner Saga episode was a little bit more niche over on the Discord, which you can join below, having only been requested by two people. That would be Valkoon to you, and then backed up by Han Dolo, but this was before he was a patron and just a average dedicated hype man. But otherwise, we still get to say that this is a patron request, so thank you guys.
Yeah.
Also... welcome to our latest apple-cheeked and full-of-life patron, Sleep Paralysis Demon Protection Fee.
And of course, Lil Chungus.
Lil Chungus, who subscribed a half hour before we started this, which is very good timing.
While we were in the bonus content.
So. Yes. Jamie's dead. RIP. Ethan, are you familiar with the Banner Saga?
Yeah, I played a lot of the first... I think at your recommendation, honestly... I think when we started the podcast 7 years ago now, I think it was like our first year doing it or whatever. You told me it was great. I think I was looking for a mobile game to play, and that had been like recommended on the Play Store to me or something like that. And then I think you said like, oh yeah, Banner Saga is fantastic. Banner Saga, is fantastic. So I think I downloaded it. I played it. I don't think I ever beat the first one because it's hard. And it's like as a Fire Emblem diehard, losing in Fire Emblem, there's permadeath in Fire Emblem if any of your characters die.
Yeah,
but like everybody in Fire Emblem all agrees, like, no, you don't lose anybody on your playthrough. You just reset the mission and beat it or whatever. Which is like in Banner Saga, there's like it's way harder to do that because it's choices that you made ages ago that can impact like that can cause your character to like leave the story or cause a character to leave the story. Right?
Yeah.
So I think I struggled with that where I was just like, damn, I would go back like a few missions and like try and like min max all the time. And I think like doing that took me out of it. But love the game, love the mechanics. It's similar to Fire Emblem where it's, I guess it's like isometrics, like grid style combat, turn based, where you like Final Fantasy Tactics or something like that, where you move your characters into position and they can do attacks. As they take damage, they get less effective at their. Like they get less offensive capabilities as well. So like taking damage hurts your offensive power, if I recall correctly, right?
Yeah. So every character has two health bars. They have, I think it's called strength. They have strength and armor. Armor is a flat damage resistance. So if you have 10 armor, that is minus 10 potential damage coming off of an enemy. but your HP, your strength, is what... I mean, your characters don't die in combat. They get injured and you have to, like, rest. It's like XCOM. I mean, XCOM is more brutal. Because if somebody gets killed in combat in XCOM, that's goodbye, right? They're just gone forever. Goodbye, Honeybee Johnson, my best sniper.
Yeah. That's Fire Emblem, too. It's like, if they die in combat, they die in real life.
Yeah, no, but your strength, your health bar, is the maximum amount of damage you can do. So if your characters get too beaten down, they are physically too weak to do damage anymore, then the fight's just over. Which I thought was really cool, because you can strategically... Like, there are spells and some things that can bypass armor. You can bypass the armor of, like, a boss monster to make him less of a threat to deal with the adds.
Yeah.
Which is, like, that's really good. I was never good at this game. I'm bad at strategy. Yeah. But, I mean, I still beat all three. I don't think I got the best ending. Because, like you were alluding to, it's not the combat that it results in the permadeath. It's
the dialogue choices.
It's the dialogue choices sometimes, like... game days in the past, or in some cases like mundane things. I still remember there's one character who, like, oh no, we're about to lose the cart full of food, and of course you have rations. It's like, oh no, we're gonna lose the cart full of food. You there, big guy, help out. He's like, okay, and trips, and he's dead, and he's gone forever, and you lose the food anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, no, that's like pretty early on in the first one, like that particular event, and I think they put it early on specifically to show you, like, yeah, no, just making the choice to try and save food and not have your people starve to death might just, like, put you in a worse position overall.
One of the big guys.
I did really enjoy the combat. I just said why I don't think I finished it. Probably also because it was a mobile game and I don't mobile game all that much.
Certainly not anymore. I mean, back in the day when we started this, you were taking public transit to work.
Train and stuff. Yeah, exactly.
Right, yeah.
Although, yeah, I would tend to read or listen to podcasts or music on the train. But, I never finished the first one. But do like the gameplay. It was challenging. But the atmosphere and the setting, and we were kind of talking about this before we started recording, right, Pete? But you were mentioning how it's like, it's a little lore light. And I would have guessed that because it's very much... a story driven like experience where it is the story itself in this very cool world, which we'll get into the lore of it obviously, but I'm not surprised. Like, it's such a good story and like there's such compelling characters that I'm not surprised that this indie company didn't flesh out like the world around them so much, but the little tidbits that they do drop are like so enticing and so good, and they do a good job of being like you don't have to fill in all the places on the map when you're telling a story, right? Like, you can only fill in the interesting parts if you want. And I feel like that's what they did really well, is they made those interesting places like so, so interesting. And like the bit of info that you do get is like so cool and so unique and so neat that they didn't do the rest of it, which is fine. It's not an open world experience anyway.
Yeah. It's like super lean. And again, like, and this is not talking shit. I love the Souls games. Right. But like, it's super lean in that, like, you know what? That piece of garbage you picked up, that actual like zero value loot, that refers to a saint. Yeah, you're not going to get a 45-minute body video out of that, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like the saint of pocket lint in whatever the realm, the lands between, is not part of this. It's very lean, but it's very concise and it's very cool. Like,
very cool.
Like I was saying, the first game starts 5 days after the main event that sets off the activity, the events of the game, like the sun stops in the sky.
Yeah, I think I must have known that, but I don't think it ever clicked for me that it was that recent. And like, again, I'm trying to remember when I played it like 6 years ago and didn't beat the game. I probably got like halfway through it, maybe three quarters of the way through it. But like, it felt like it was longer. And so yeah, the sun stops in the sky, and it's like it's like also slowly fading. So it's like, it's just winter, and the winter's just like getting worse essentially, right?
I rewatched the intro to the first game when I was writing the script, because I was like, well, did the sun stop like centuries ago, or was it? And then it's just like the opening narration is like a guy doing a Swedish accent. He's like, a few days ago the sun stopped in the sky, and it's just like, all right, there you go. It's like a week later basically. It's calculated in business days basically.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's cool, often on sale, And another cool thing is, obviously, because it is very choice-driven and people do die forever, now that the trilogy's out, and the trilogy's been out since, like, 2018, all three of them are out, it's just one game now. Yeah. You just play continuously, and I think you can launch them all within other ones. Like, there's a launch Banner Saga 2 button in Banner Saga 1 and then 3 and 2. You can just carry on, and yeah, they're often cheap. And even for me, who sucks at turn-based strategy, I think I beat the third one. I've done two playthroughs of the first and then one of 2 and 3, because obviously the second one took a long time to come out, but they made so much money they released the third one fairly quickly. So yeah. To even understand what the fuck was happening and to make sure, like, the people who died in the first game, like, oh no, I earned those failures to import into the second.
Yeah,
replayed that. But I beat the third one I saw in 14 hours, and I'm not particularly good at it. So it's not even like a huge commitment.
No,
if you're good, it's even like, it's totally worth it. Yeah, cheap, on sale. Tell Stoic Pete sent you. The lore boys sent you. Yeah. But yeah, enough praise for the moment. I think we should get into it. And we'll just assume Jamie hasn't played it or did and very much liked it, but will probably buy it on sale, install it, and then not play it.
Yeah, exactly. I would say it's safe to say that if Jamie's played it, he has not beaten. I think that's fair. I think that's fair for me to say, and I think Jamie would agree that was fair for me to say.
Oh, they're on my Steam account, actually, and since I'm going to be playing Horizon 2 through Family Share, you can just pick up and play them whenever you want. It's not like I'm going to be online.
I don't have your games. You have my games, but I've never signed into your account on mine.
Oh, I thought they were linked. Never mind.
No, it's a one-way thing.
Well, I'll keep my treasures for me then.
Yeah, exactly.
Fuck you.
I mean, I literally just opened the store. I was like, how much does the bundle cost? You know what I mean?
How much is it?
It's fair. Like, if you get the trilogy edition. So, it's weird. It's like, there's the Banner Saga 4 pack, but it doesn't tell you what that is. Because I don't know what the fourth one is. Which is $82, $83. But the trilogy deluxe bundle is $71. And then the Saga Trilogy Stoic Edition bundle is $82. So, I don't know. Around 80. I don't think.
Guys, just name your game bundles regular, deluxe, gold.
Yeah.
It's none of this other shit.
I don't know what the 4-pack is. I honestly feel, I don't think this is a problem with the naming. I think this is a problem with the Steam UI. Just the 4-pack. It doesn't tell me what the 4-pack is. But I can view, like, the bundles. I can view
right. What's
actually in them. But the 4-pack, I don't know what it is. And it's the most expensive one by, like, 70 cents. I don't know. Weird.
The soundtrack's great too, so that probably comes with that.
Soundtracks are great. Yeah. The Stoic bundle comes with like soundtrack, comes with some desktop wallpapers, and it comes with some Banner Saga 3 DLC. Ooh. Like there's some item packs and two item packs, legendary items and deluxe items. Okay. That's what it comes with.
Pay to win Banner Saga. Yeah.
Yeah. We talk about it relatively often, I guess, with like games that we really, really like, but this really is one for me, and I think for you too, Pete, that just, like, it checks all the boxes. Like, it's fantastic story, great gameplay, which is, like, again, it's like that Final Fantasy Tactics, Fire Emblem, like, style of gameplay, but, like, just the one cool unique mechanic, which is, like, that, yeah, as your health drops, your strength drops too, which, like, also just, like, makes sense in like a real sense. Like, yeah, you took a crushing sword blow, like, you're
losing blood.
You're gonna be worse at swinging your own sword, right? But the art style, which I know you're gonna get into because you asked Jamie to pose for the art style ahead of us even knowing what the jokes are gonna be, so you could draw them like a French girl. But, like, it's rotoscope, right, is what it's called. So the environments are fantastic. The cutscenes are fantastic because it's like Disney animated style. It feels like a like the Beauty and the Beast or like the Hunchback of Notre Dame-esque characters, you know, of these like medieval era peasants kind of making their way around. But cutscenes, story, the RPG elements are like good because you can like level up your characters, but it's, you never really get them to a place where they feel like too strong. I don't know. Just really, really every box for me. And I can stop guessing. We can actually talk about the freaking lore of this game eventually.
But. Yeah, I guess the last thing would be, like, in saying that, just like while we're gushing and vamping a little bit to try and sell it to people, I can't think of a thing, single thing I don't like about it. Like, it's not buggy. It's fun. There's a good story. Like, yeah, it's but yeah.
You're supporting an indie dev. Like, it's just, yeah,
exactly.
It's just all good all the way down. Yeah.
So, yeah, enough gushing. Yeah, that's true. What are the people here for? Down a man, waste even more time.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, we talk about it fairly often, but Jamie's the one that keeps us on rails, so.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, when the universe of the Banner Saga was created is not known, but it is believed that the primary goddess of the pantheon, who is called the Loom Mother, wove all of creation into existence using her, go figure, celestial table saw. She's a, right. She's yep. into the trades. So the first game starts in the year zero. It's a few days, like I said, after the sun simply just stops in the sky and never goes down. This is taken by most people as a bad omen, and then people invent calendars and just set them to zero because they were like, we're going to want to... There's the before and after the sunrise, basically.
Yeah, like, exactly.
This is the big thing. So one day, about 5 centuries ago, so even like the lore is lean, but even the world itself is young. Things went tits up very quickly in the land of the Banner Saga. It's kind of bleak how bad things went because life did not exist until 500 years ago. So the Loom Mother wove life into the world tapestry and created the human race, giving us the gift of reason. So she sewed in a little extra facts and logic.
Okay.
It's neat in this universe, unlike a lot of fantasy universes, where humanity is at the actual first race.
Right? Okay.
She created humans.
Well, just like in our universe. That's how God did it.
You're right. Excuse me. It's not so it's not so weird if you look at it like that.
Yeah. In the beginning, there was nothing. Then God created houseflies, and then God created man. Yeah. God created houseflies, then he created silkworms, then he created man. So we were number 3 in our universe.
Yeah, exactly. We just luckily, he was just tired of bugs. And he was like, I really should create something in my own image. And meanwhile, it's like a giant bug with a beard. Just like.
So a man made out of like flies, essentially.
Just like a cloud of flies in like the white robe. So, she showed a little extra facts and logic into the human race. The most facts and logic among humans were the menders, humans that the Loom Mother taught the magic of weaving, allowing menders to pull the strings of reality, like healing wounds and casting offensive spells. So they're not called mages in-game, it's not a class, but you do get a mender on your team. You start with one, you get a couple others in the as you go down.
Yeah.
Weaving can be taught. It's not like you're not born with it. It is Maybelline in this case.
Okay, yeah. In the D&D parallels, it's wizards, not sorcerers, where it's you can train it. Yeah, right. Yeah,
exactly. So
identifying the patterns of the weave, right? And being able to spot it and then thus being able to manipulate it.
Yeah, exactly. I think there's a quote from Ivan, who's one of the menders you get on your team in the game, and he's just like, oh, anybody can do it. It's just like, we just see the world a little differently. We can see the strings and pull them.
Yeah.
And like when he casts spells, it's represented through string as well, because it's like the universe is very much like a tapestry created by a goddess.
Yeah, which I think it is I think that's D&D. Like, that's not a unique concept, that the weave is the weave of magic in D&D. But I think it's also like the weave of fate, and you know in Disney's Hercules, it's, you know, the thread of fate that gets cut or whatever, because that's like your line of thread, which would presumably be weaved into a greater tapestry of all life, right? So an older idea, I think, but
yeah, I guess we didn't mention it at the top. The Banner Saga is very distinctly Norse. We're on a very Norse myth.
You mentioned recently. You did mention that there was a Swedish man or a Swedish accented man reading at the beginning.
I suppose that would have just given it away.
I want to say Stoic is not I don't think it's a European game. I think they are American.
Chaos.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh, one cool thing, I watched a behind the scenes. It's about the devs. Very small. I think it's like 80 people now, but it was 5 when they started. The rotoscope animation for the banner that you hang over your party, basically, the way they rotoscope that is they put like one of those like crinkled party streamers on a house fan and just turned it on and shot some footage. So the twisting in the wind is like just slowed down like a birthday streamer.
Do you want to talk about what rotoscoping is? Because you've explained it to me before, and you've probably explained it on air on the podcast when I think in the early days of the podcast, we probably talked about the Banner Saga a lot. When I was playing it, we were probably talking about it in our drunken 4-hour episodes. But we've said Rotoscope twice now. So do you want to talk about like what it is, I guess?
Now that I'm sober as a Mormon at the moment, at least for 2:30. So I'll condense it.
Rotoscoping a beer on a 2:30 on a Monday.
On a Muzday.
Muzday.
It's when you take real footage and you draw over it frame by frame. So a film director who does a lot of it, he's very famous for it, is Ralph Bashke, does a lot of rotoscoping. It's where you shoot live action, draw or paint over it. It used to be drawn and paint over because you used to have a film cell. Obviously, the Banner Saga is a digital product. But they had real actors act out the actions. They had a party streamer strapped to a fan for their Viking banner. it's a very distinct style of animation because since you trace the people and the objects, it's like hyper real shapes and like painted cartoon colors. So it's the only game I know of that has like a straight up rotoscope style, like style cover to cover. I'm not 100% certain, but it's a really cool format. I think like the Take On Me music video is rotoscoped as well, but it's all pencil drawing, right? So just that sort of thing. But yeah, it's just a specific art style, and it's a really good one. It's like, you know, there's not a whole lot of claymation games, so that would be cool next, right?
You don't know any video. I looked up video games that have rotoscoping. Banner Saga does not feature on the Wikipedia list. I'm just sure it hasn't been updated, right?
Like
it's a stub article, but there's I don't know, maybe 20 games that I recognize, or not 20 games that I recognize. Excuse me. There's 20 games, most of which I do not recognize, but you're talking about you not knowing what other games would feature. Mortal Kombat 1992 was rotoscoped.
That's true. Yes.
We did talk about it in the episode. Yes. Apparently the two original Prince of Persia's. So the 1989 and the 1993 games, Prince of Persia, were apparently rotoscoped.
Yeah. There you go.
There you go.
That's true. I forgot. Yeah, because the original Mortal Kombat was people in like pajamas and like hockey gear.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's all. Anyway, they did the same thing for the Banner Saga. It's great. Mm-hmm. Back to the Menders. Just a quick recap here. The mages, the mage class of the world, which I did not find a name for. I just refer to it as creation or the world. The Loom Mother created it. It is the tapestry of life. So the highest ranking menders are called the Valka, and two of the most important ones in history are in game. They're both party members, are Juno and Ivan. Ivan is the first one you get, and you meet his wife or lover, Juno, later on, and she ends up being quite important in the latter half of the trilogy.
Okay, cool.
They're both important throughout, but she takes over kind of, because like Ivan starts, because he's like using magic for other reasons, starts like rapidly aging, and he ends up just being like a crippled old man by the third one. So he gets a little too much magic salt and pepper in his beard, and then he just has to be hauled around in a cart.
Exactly. Yeah. Magic Rogaine.
Exactly. That's the healing potion. You spray Rogaine on your wizard instead of like a blue potion. It's just like rubbing it in. So Menders and Valka all die of old age like regular people. They don't have extended lifespans or anything like that. However, like I said, weaving can still be taught. So they actually pass down their knowledge through a massive home base they have called the Manahar, which there is a fight at, I believe, in the first game. I think the last boss is at the Manahar.
It's the
Mage's Tower.
Base.
I can't remember if it's in the first or the second. It's in one of them, so spoilers. But that is the home base. That is their wizard school on where they teach people the art of mending.
Okay.
To this day, Menders have some of the most political power in the land. So they're basically like lobbyists for Big Loom, because kings and dukes and other royalty will take on Menders as advisors. And obviously it's just like, hey, this guy can strike me down with a bolt of lightning at any time. So
yeah, exactly.
if he's
I
just
want him
like,
on my side. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like, I think we should increase the price of insulin. You just go, yes, Mr. Mender, we will do that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. It's a trope, but I think it's a sensible one, like the Witcher books, right? Like the same thing.
The Lodge,
all the sorcerers of the Lodge are political advisors. That's their like whole shtick. It's a lobbyist group, right?
Exactly.
But it's like you say, like, yeah, if they can, if they could just summon a dragon in your throne room, like, yeah, it's going to be a problem, right?
Yeah. You gotta get to your side, basically. Lobbyists in the real world should be happy that the only problem is, like, the only problems we have is, like, moral consequences, as opposed to being burned alive from the inside or turned into bugs. Yeah. If only, eh?
Yeah, if only we could burn lobbyists alive from the inside and turn them into bugs.
Turn them into bugs. Turn them into bugs, FBI agent who's currently listening because fucking documents were leaked on Discord and now we've all got one. I swear to God, if Lil Chungus is an FBI plant, I'm going to be so upset.
Welcome. Welcome, FBI.
Yeah, exactly. Agent.
Our anarcho-communist podcast.
Yeah. So we're not going to talk about all the gods because, again, not all of them get a full story. There is a pantheon in the first game. Okay. There is 7, and then 5 more are added in the second game. There are, like, gods of war and the hunt and all this shit, but
okay,
we're going to be talking about the primary ones that have an effect on the world. I did want to give a special shout out to Dunder, who is the primary male god and a disciple and probably lover of the Loom Mother. He is responsible for beards, so he's the Rogaine god.
Okay.
He's responsible for beards, smithing, games, and songs of mirth. And he does just sound like the coolest dude to hang with. I was because you were away for Bobby's birthday this weekend and that I couldn't go to because of Greek Easter. I was like, Dunder is just Bobby. Like, he's just a cool guy.
He's got games and mirth and hobbies. And yeah, exactly. Like,
yeah, he brews his own beer. Like,
he always has
a new board game.
Yeah, he very much sounds like the, if you know, if he's in love with the Loom Mother, it very much sounds like she's the girl boss mom, you know, who kind of decides all of fate in a pretty big way by giving people the gift of magic.
The first thing she created on the loom was a pantsuit. Like,
yeah, exactly.
The girl boss energy.
Yeah, on the first day, God invented the pantsuit. and he just sounds like the very cool, very introverted, like, you know, stepdad figure who's just like super quiet and he cracks the occasional dad joke, but just like super quiet and having fun.
yeah it's just like cool to hang out with. He's just one of the boys and always is, which is he's got like a successful wife. And yeah, he's just like, yeah, I got my man cave in the basement. He's a house husband basically, which is one of my dreams. I think I'd be a pretty good house husband personally.
I think that's all. Yeah, I think the three boys, and again, I'm comfortable speaking for Jamie here. I think all of us would be fine just like having somebody else pay for our lifestyles and not have to do anything.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. Call us crazy. Call us. You know, we're radical leftists. You know what I mean? We just want we want boss mommy to take over our lives for us.
Look, I'm happy loading and unloading the dishwasher. I vacuumed today. I have to do the corners that my robot can't get into. Like, like house husbandry. That doesn't make any sense. It's like you're breeding houses. house husbandness is like mostly automated. Yeah. Feed the house. So yeah, that's our shout out to house husband Dunder. One of the gods we are going to get into though is Hatterborg. He is the patron god of the Varl race. And Hatterborg learned his ability to create life from the Loom Mother herself. However, he wasn't nearly as skilled. So another cool thing about the Loom Mother, and I guess, I don't know if they were thinking this when they're writing, a lot of the male-led pantheons of real mythology are fucked up.
Yeah.
Right? This one here, the Loom Mother, is just like, hey guys, I created pantsuits and life. Anybody want to chill? She's like doing pottery classes for the other gods and shit. Yeah. And Hatterborg
wine and pottery night with Hatterborg. Yeah,
exactly. It's like the what is it? Ghost.
It's ghost. Yeah,
yeah. On the loom though, instead of the throwing pottery.
Yeah. It's Hatterborg, so it's just like a varl, like behind, essentially, like
exactly
behind the Loom Mother. Yeah.
So he spent some time creating the animals of the world. However, he got a little bored of this and eventually started combining animals with some of the Loom Mother's humans. This is how he created the Varl, which is what you just alluded to. Also, the guy who can get killed by like trying to save the apple cart is a Varl as well. So they are very big and very strong, which is why the choice is just like, have Gunnulf do it. And then, of course, the apple cart is too heavy and he dies. So the Varl were created. This is kind of like an internal legend among the Varl, but regardless, it's considering they have real gods, it's probably true.
Probably true.
He combined a Yox, which is a big hairy cow with big horns, and it's
combine a yak meets an ox, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, it's like a dronky or a mule or a liger or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Much like ligers and mules, because he only combined the yaks with human men, the Varl are a tall, heavy, strong, and only male race. Because they had to be directly created by God, he just neglected to create Varl women.
Cool, yeah. He's the ultimate incel god.
He is, yeah. So the Varl are an entirely male race, which why it's like, it's not explained, but like sometimes I'm like, oh, maybe he was just too shy to put boobs on or whatever when he's like shaking the clay. He's too squeamish.
Yeah. Well, should he's got one in front of him. It's like looking around. He's like got the little like perfectly sculpted boobies on her. And then like the loom mother walks in. She's like, hey, what are you working on? Nothing.
Nothing. Like, yeah. Somewhere there's like the creation of life putty set of boobs in the banner's bag. if you want to open up this first spoiler image, and then I have a description here, but you might be able to do another one there for let the people know what a Varl is.
It's a big blonde guy with a mustache and two big horns.
Yeah.
They got horns. They're people. They're men with horns.
They're about twice as tall and probably five times heavier than a regular human man. They're much, much, much larger. They're like like the heavy classes. They're the DPS basically that you get, or the tanks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Less your magic users. Your healers or delicate.
They're too stubborn for magic. Yeah. So you can teach a Varl to mend, but you can't make him loom or whatever. So the Varl can live for centuries if their warlike tendencies don't get the best of them first. However, one of the issues, the fact that they're all men, is they cannot reproduce and are doomed to die out. The last Varl ever created by Hatterborg was named Kvig, and was created roughly 80 to 100 years before the events of the game. Oh, wow. So all of the surviving Varl in the game were directly created by Hatterborg himself.
So sending that Varl to grab the wagon that's falling off the cliff is like taking the last African white rhino and being like, yeah, go jump in front of that wagon that's falling off a cliff for me so I can save the food rations. Like,
yeah,
makes it worse, right?
Because there is we'll get into it, but it is impossible now to create more Varl. So this is kind of why it's like legend says they combined a yox with a man, but it's like, no, all these guys were there. They were actually physically made. They have the memory of being created. I don't know if they're created as children and have to like grow up and like let their horns grow in and have like teenage ruts in the playground, like whatever, like pubescent elk. But like that's it. Maybe they're created fully formed. I know they definitely age because there's like a scribe Varl in game who's like, his hair's all white and his horns are all twisted and gnarled now because he's clearly was created 500 years ago, opposed to a whippersnapper like Kvig who's
80 years old,
right? Something like that.
Young spry chicken.
He is, yeah, exactly. His horns are all still sharp and smooth, not covered in scars. So combining animals with people seems to require fire, or at least magic fire in some capacity, because the Varl still have a fear of fire in game, which will come up later.
Cool.
And again, this is not like an ancestral thing or like a taught memory. It's just like straight up. It's like, oh yeah, I was, I don't know, smelted with a yak and now I look like this, right? I wanted to be an accountant. Can you imagine? Yeah. Can you imagine they still have their human memories? Of just like, what do you want to be when you grow up sort of thing? It's like, I want to be a scientist. Oh, I want to be a weaver. It's like, yeah, fuck you, nerd. You're a buffalo now. this isn't like the first time. This isn't the last time, rather, someone would combine humans with animals. I couldn't find who created them, but the horseborn, or they're just centaurs, were created by someone. But maybe he kind of like realized his mistake about like, man, if these guys can't breed, then I'm gonna run out of like big burly bison men soon. So the centaurs or the horseborn do indeed have males and females, so they can reproduce. You can open up the second spoiler image. I took one of a female horseborn. She's one of the main ones in the game. I can't remember her name.
She's not in the first one, is she? I don't remember centaurs in the game.
They're not crazy? In the first one. No.
No. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, she's a centaur. She's, you know, woman up top, horsewoman on bottom, presumably. Six. She's an insect. She's an insect, technically. Six limbs, right?
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
Powerful horse thorax.
I was going to say, she's got the head and thorax of a woman. I do like a woman with a good thorax.
We all do.
Between tits and ass, I'd take thorax all day.
Yeah, yeah.
So the male horseborn are called the Teulu, and the females are called Cantref. And they're very Celtic and like British Isles inspired in their artwork. They've got the blue paint on, and they're much more like ranged classes. These are a lot of spears and whatnot.
Cool.
So the Varl horseborn and humans were all neighbors, right? And like a good neighbor, the Great War was there. Humanity and the Varl did not get along at all. And roughly 125 years ago, so this is all before year zero, the beginning of the game, right? The first Great War had begun. What would become a problem for the Pantheon eventually, the first god to take sides was the god of war, Baldringer, who gifted fire to the humans, which allowed them to terrify and push back the Varl army. Yeah. So the gods were aware. I guess they were talking shop, right? Up in heaven. Just, you know, good, like a nice loom conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
Sitting there leaning up on it and being like, yeah, I created these buffalo guys in a forge and now they're terrified of fire because I guess I burned them together. And the god of war is just sitting there like, that's fucked up, man. That's crazy.
Yeah.
And then a war against them started and he was like, oh no. I guess he probably took sides because the Loom Mother had created humanity and she is the primary god. He was just like, oh no, Loom Mommy's watching. And yeah. Like, yeah, secretly gave fire to the humans. Who knows how many Varl were killed? But again, it's a finite amount.
Yeah. It's an interesting twist on like the Prometheus myth, right? Where it's like he stole fire from the gods on Olympus to give to humans, right? And suffered eternally for it. But like the idea that there were already like there was another race that existed like kind of on the same level as humans, like not among the Pantheon, that they could use that against. And there was like those presumably if he's a god of war, he like wanted war, right? Like that's how he you know gets his worship and everything. So
yeah.
Although maybe he became the god of war after giving them fire because then he got worshipped for that weapon which was used against them. I don't know, it's all interesting.
Yeah, we can only speculate as well because that part is all Lore Boys canon. But yeah, he's now known as the god of war and is, you know, shunned by the Varl, as you can imagine.
Match,
as like
match him,
right? Yeah. So while this war was raging, Stravs, another god, but this time kind of a bitchy jealous god, kind of consulted the Loom Mother and stole her ideas on how to create his own life. This time he uses the invading army of rock monsters trap card.
Okay.
And he creates the Dredge. The Dredge are the primary antagonists of the first, well, I guess all three games. And if you want to open up the next picture, you can describe them to the audience.
Yeah, it's a picture of the Dredge. They always gave me Iron Giant vibes, right? With the glowing yellow, perfectly circular eyes. And they're essentially stone robots. Yeah, stone robots, I think, is the best way to describe them, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I would think that maybe he was like looking at the mistakes of the previous gods when Stravs was creating the Dredge, because he was just like, okay, well, males and females, they gotta be able to fuck. I need my subterranean rock monsters to I just can't sit here looming all day. I've got things to do. I've got to be worshipped for other reasons. So males and females, you can get your little rock monster babies, okay?
Yeah, get your rocks off, right?
I tried not to say that. I was like, nah. but yeah, so they can breed, so they can replenish their armies, and they also do not die of old age. So the two major problems with the...
And they don't even care about fire.
No, and they're not afraid of fire either. I guess I left that part out. Mm-hmm. But yeah, humans, get old, die. Varl, can't fuck. So...
Yeah.
You got your perfect
two problems. Yeah,
you got your perfect ones.
And they're always rock hard. They're always ready to fuck.
They're always ready to fuck. Yeah. So the Dredge can only be killed in battle. What?
She was wet as sandstone.
Oh, God. What? Oh man, dredge porn must be crazy. CIA would fuck the shit out of that.
Yeah. If you guys want to know what the fuck we're talking about with why we're injecting the CIA into this, subscribe to our Patreon and listen to tomorrow's bonus content.
Yeah, exactly.
It's gonna come up there.
Yeah. So some the dredge can only be killed in battle, and some of them, like Bellower, who is the last boss of the first game, can only be killed with magical artifacts. Some of them are just fucking immortal unless you have the correct spell.
And maybe you don't know this. Maybe it's not actually confirmed lore or not. Like the magical artifacts, do we learn what those are at all? Like, are they gifts from the gods? Are they just imbued with like certain powers of the weave? Or like, do you know at all?
So both. Again, there's not a ton because they don't have like, again, the paragraphs of flavor text. You can get the Whetstone of Strahd, which is like it's a passive artifact. Like, because you get one, you have one loot slot on your character.
Strahd made the dredge, or he made the Varl. Sorry.
Strahd made the dredge.
Dredge, yeah. It was Hadaborg.
Hadaborg made the Varl, exactly. Yeah, no. So continuing on with the kind of like rock and like warsmith theme, you can get Strahd's Whetstone, which will buff you, so it does carry some divine power within the game.
Okay.
Some of the stuff I read may have been from flavor text on those items, but like Strahd is known as the... There's also like Worship of the Gods is still done within the games, and they have these gigantic monuments built to them. They're called Godstones, and generally speaking, you'll pass by one. There's a little cutscene where they'll explain something about like that god, basically. Mm-hmm. And then, and they'll carry on there. But yeah, they're worshipped like, not temples, but like carved into mountainsides or something like that. And one of them, the God of War's Godstone is like a 800 foot tall like bush of like pointy vines, basically. So they're all kind of representative. Strahd is who I don't have a screenshot of, sadly. Pretty normal looking dude. Looks kind of just like a slick god. He's got like a goatee and like short hair. It is just like kind of a chubby guy. So classic created rock monsters kind of vibes, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
If I were judging books by their covers, that's what I would
classic rock monster.
Yeah, classic.
That's a classic rock monster book right there.
The dredge have some magical abilities. Their versions of weavers are called stone singers, which connects them to some different part of the Tapestry of Creation. But yeah, again, the subterranean rock monster thing is they're not pulling from the weave, they're pulling from the earth. And that's right. I don't know if they have mages in the first game, but stone singers are in the second and third. I know that.
It sounds familiar, honestly.
Yeah.
But
slim rock monsters, and they've got the sword and the spear, and you have one turn to stop their spell because they clap it together and it like vibrates in the ground.
Yeah,
and you can interrupt, but you have one turn to do it.
I could be misremembering, but that sounds familiar enough that I'm going to say that I think they're in the first one.
Yeah. So during the Great War, the appearance of a third sex-having immortal army led humanity and the Varl to call a truce and to work together, thus ending the First Great War. Now, for accuracy's sake, I will note that Men and Varl did not know at the time that the dredge could breed. Originally, they thought they were the dead come back to life because of their like gray, dusty skin and the fact that they were emerging from underground.
Yeah, sure. That makes sense.
You don't find out that they get their freak on until the third game, I believe.
Zombies don't fuck.
No, notoriously.
Zombies? The real incels, right?
Now that the war's over, they've got a common enemy. We need to check back in on the Pantheon, but we're going to check in on the Pantheon after the break.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back from the break, everybody, but especially Ethan. I'm glad I'm not talking to nobody.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah. Especially Pete.
Aw. So, back up in heaven, or wherever the gods are at this point, in their version of reality.
Yeah, sure.
Horrified by Strahd's dredge creations, the Loom Mother cast him out of the Pantheon, but in doing so, accidentally killed him. This spread panic among the Pantheon, because they did not know they could die, and they immediately started getting paranoid and infighting with each other, thus leading to the death of every single god in the world.
Even the Loom Mother?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Everybody.
So she just wrote him out of existence. She said, no, that was fucked up creating the dredge, and then kills him. And then
by accident, else, and everybody freaks out and they start. There's like a war among the gods, basically. And again, there's not a ton of them that we even know about. But yeah, they.
I love that it's like, oh, my God, we can die. I better kill everybody else before they can kill me.
That is basically it. Yeah,
it's like the first reaction is just like, yeah. Well, I'm not going to be the fucking one left holding the fucking stick when it comes to fucking dying.
Yeah, so. Exactly. That's basically it. That's why like some people believe there's at least one god in hiding and all the others are dead, because at some point it should have been like, okay, we're both going to take the poison pill, right? And die at the exact same time. Like, yeah. And then you like just you cheek it. And then when Hatterborg is dying of cyanide poisoning in the god bunker, you sit there and you spit out a tic tac. You're like, I'm so fucking sorry, Hatterborg. I'm so sorry. You like steal his identity and go into hiding.
Yeah. You understand. You would have killed me if it didn't come to this, right? You understand that, right?
No. I thought the war was stupid. But yeah, the gods all get terrible. They all just get scared of their own shadows and they're all gone. Every single one of them.
Wow. Fantastic. Yeah,
it's such a cool twist, eh?
Outstanding move, gods.
Yeah. It's just, or like, it is kind of like slapstick in a way. Because there's like, did you ever watch, I'm going to forget the name of the movie now. There's like these con men renting and living in the basement of an old lady, and they're trying to like tunnel into a bank or something.
The Lady Killers, no?
It's got Tom Hanks in it.
The Lady Killers, I think, is the name of the...
Yeah, okay. And they all die... all the bad guys die under like unfortunate self-inflicted circumstances. So like I'm in my head, Loreboy's canon is they all like clumsily killed themselves with their own specialty. Like the Loom Mother's all tied up in the loom and like in Final Destination gets like hung by loom string or something like that.
Yeah.
Well, there's a gas leak in the forge and the god of smithing, like accidentally, you know, when he's making a sword or whatever. And he just like one errant spark comes off and he dies in a gas fire.
But I love the idea that it's because it's after they learn that they can die. Right. So it's all them being like overly cautious. And it's that over caution that like leads them to die. So like the forge god is like, oh, like Hatterberg's like, oh, man, OK, this is fucked up, you know, so I, you know. People can die. Gods can die. That's fucked up. Okay, I'm going to lock my door, but he doesn't realize that like leaving his door open all the time is letting the CO2 out.
Yes.
Or the CO out, right? So he just dies of like carbon monoxide poisoning and like falls asleep in his shop. He's just, I'm just going to get back in my car and, you know, I'm going to roll up all the windows or whatever, you know, but forgets to take the hose that's attached to his exhaust out of the car, you know, like.
Yes. I love, that's canon now. I love the like the paranoid helicopter parent thing. Oh, I mean, it is like an ironic death of like, it's like Final Destination, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Something like that.
The God of War is like, okay, they're going to come for me. So I got to, you know, I got to lay traps or whatever, you know, and he's got just the, you know, like a shiv tied to a crutch that's like rigged to fall as soon as somebody steps onto a step, like in a meth house. But he's like, he forgets about it, walks right into it. You know, it's just like in the middle of the night, he's like walking down in his underwear to get a glass of water and like shivs himself.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and that good time God that we gave a shout out to at the top of the show, he would definitely be like, oh, I can't invite friends over to play my board games anymore, so I'm going to put them all in the closet. And then crushed in a hoarding accident when he's exactly. all his minis. Board games. So all the gods being dead or gone, let's say there's one person, there is one guy there just huddled up in the closet.
I mean,
you know.
Yeah, I like the idea of there being one left, but I will say, if I had to guess, like the actual canon, if they ever had to come out and like decide definitively one way or another, I'm gonna guess the Stoic folks would say, no, they're all dead. Because, and you touched on this earlier, like it's such a bleak setting and such a bleak game.
Yeah.
I think it is like very fitting that like, no, all the gods are dead.
Yeah.
Like there's no gods. Like they're just all dead. They all died, you know.
The last one.
There's no hope. The last hope was killed, right?
Like, yeah. Yeah. It did not seem, though, at least when the last god, whose shoes had been tied together because they were paranoid of losing them, tripped and fell down the stairs, breaking their neck. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
This did not seem to have the apocalyptic effect on the world, or at least not right away. So the Varl and the humans over the next couple of centuries were just like, maybe not even aware of the gods in heaven being dead, or maybe they do, because it is stated. It's the first line of the intro. The Swedish man says, "The gods are dead." And then, then comments on the sun being stopped in the sky, which I wouldn't put them in that order, personally.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's kind of told, I mean, that's a narrator, right? So it can be like limited omniscience or whatever, where like he knows something that the characters in the story don't necessarily know.
Yeah.
And like, I do think seeing the sun stop in the sky would probably make you believe that, especially if you believe there's a Loom Mother who's like weaving the tale of all existence. And this is probably the canon and something that you learn later in the game. But like, I'm going to assume it's like she was crocheting the sun rising and setting every day, right? Like that was like in the loom, that was like one of her threads that she would go. And so it's like she dies and then sometime later the sun stops moving because it's no longer written. What's also cool about that is like, from a storytelling point of view, it's like now the choices that your characters make, because it's a game all about choices. Like you were saying, like the permadeath comes from character choices and dialogue options. And like the idea now that like the characters, their destiny for the first time in their lives is completely their own, because it's not being written what they're doing. Everything they do is their own actions now, is also like a cool like consequence of that loom no longer being operated, right?
Well, it kind of puts you the player in the Loom Mother position, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You're the last one pulling the threads.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, the fate of all of us is to be crushed to death by an apple cart, right? Like that's
God, I hope so.
I hope so. With big feet on it instead of like wooden wheels, like high heels on your apple cart.
Yeah, it's just thick thighs on the back of an apple cart,
pushing itself along. So kingdoms of men were founded along with the Mender Council and the Kingdom of the Varl. So the Kingdom of Men is called Aberang, which you'd recognize from the game. The Mender Council, like I said, is at Manahar, which is a giant tower. And the Kingdom of the Varl were founded by Einar in Einartoft. So he named it after himself. Eventually,
Einar.
He does die.
What's Einar? We know Einar from something else, don't we?
Einar is a pretty Nordic-sounding name. It might be from...
I feel like some other game we were talking about recently. It might be from God of War, honestly.
Well, what are they called? The Ivar? Aesir. The Aesir are the gods of Norse mythology.
Yeah. Oh, maybe it's the Einar. Maybe it's the Aesir and the Einar. Einar is Scandinavian given name deriving from the Old Norse name Einar. Directly connected to the Einherjar warriors who died in battle and ascended to Valhalla in Norse mythology.
Okay, there we go.
So that's what an Einar is.
Yeah. So the Einar is the name of a Varl. He is the first Varl king. There are several other Varl kings throughout the game. One of which you meet. I can't remember his name, but one of the Varl kings you do meet. I think he joins your party briefly as well. Okay. You meet a lot of characters. There's the prince named Ludin, who is like one of your party members, who is, I remember being so fucking good because he's like a pikeman.
Okay.
And his spear can hit two guys in a row or something like that. Or he can go past people, so you can have him behind someone else and he can poke through. I remember him being like fucking busted good. Like so good.
I mean, in the history of warfare for mankind, like anything pre-firearms, spears were the best weapon. So
yeah.
That's how Sweden, or not Sweden, but Switzerland managed to maintain independence. Like throughout its existence, basically, and never be conquered, was because like they had really good pikemen. That's why they got to guard the Pope. You know what I mean? Because
they still get to guard the Pope.
They had pointy thing. Sure, everybody had pointy thing though. They had pointy thing on big stick.
They had biggest stick. Yeah. Long pointy thing. Oh, maybe that's again the CIA. It's just like to try and demoralize the KGB, telling them the Swiss have bigger pikes.
And you listeners, if you want to understand that joke and laugh at it, you got to subscribe to our Patreon, patreon.com/loreboys, because you'll get the bonus content tomorrow.
Linked below. I love dropping little hints in here, little tiny crumbs to try and entice people in.
And it is the fun part about recording the bonus right before we do this episode.
Yeah. Warm up. It's a good vocal warm up. So yeah, these three, the two kingdoms, and then the Mender Council were set up kind of in the span of 20 years, about 100 years before the game. The Varl continued pushing back the Dredge further and further north into the tundra, eventually hunting them for sport, which is pretty crazy. The Dredge would retaliate in what eventually would become called the Second Great War. This war would end when the Menders cast spells so terrible and so powerful that some later on in history during the game considered the spells the Menders use as genocidal. And the Dredge were...
Sorry, the so it's the Menders against the Dredge? Are the...
It's everybody.
Everybody against the Dredge. So the Varl were like pushing the Dredge back, and then everyone else was like, hell yeah, let's all just genocide the Dredge.
No, the Dredge sought revenge because they were being pushed back because they, I mean, were an invading army, right? They were created by a hostile god to sow chaos. But eventually, after being pushed back so far, because the Dredge are alive, they're sentient, right? Yeah. They kind of drew the line and wanted to get vengeance on the kingdoms of Men and Varl after they started being hunted for sport. Because once tensions kind of simmered down after the first war, right? They've been pushed back. They're living in the tundra. They've got time to set up kingdoms down south and in the west and in the east. Let's not do anything. But then, you know, to get the practice in, some of the boys would head out with their big horns and their shields and hunt villages of Dredge for sport.
Okay.
Which the Dredge would come back because of like, hey, we lost the war already. And now we're getting revenge sort of thing.
Sure, sure. So yeah. we had said that we had joked that like, oh, the Varl are the tanks. Not the Menders, not the magic types, but that's not canon, right? Like a Varl could, in theory, I don't know if we ever see a Varl Mender, but in theory, there's nothing stopping them from being Menders.
There are no Varl Menders in-game.
In-game.
And I only looked into the two main ones, being Juno and Ivan. Yeah. I don't believe so, because Mending was given to humans by the Loom Mother, and she did not create the Varl.
Okay. So yeah. Presumably...
Varl got horns instead.
True. They're horny.
Also good. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. You
got the gift of horniness.
They must be so horny. No chicks.
No ability. Well, I mean, they could bang, right? You can still bang. They just can't procreate.
That's true. Oh, yeah. I kind of forgot about that.
You kind of forgot about gay people, huh, Pete?
I did, yeah. Again, my bad.
Jesus.
I was like, damn, I can't believe you could never have sex. Can you? I was thinking of like the plague of the school ground rumor at like Varl High School, where like one guy is bragging. He's just like, yeah, man, I lost my virginity. I have like 1,000 Varl chicks. And meanwhile, no one in history has ever seen a Varl chick. Because they were all created at the same time, by God.
No, I did get a girlfriend actually during summer vacation. You know, she goes to another school. She's from Mountain, Ontario. So like, you guys wouldn't know her, but I did meet a Varl chick. It was pretty sick.
Yeah, they got smaller horns. You know, like just like trying to describe and make it sound sexy of like a regular cow that he saw on a farm.
Yeah. Oh, dude, she had her tits just like hanging there between her legs, you know? It was like, oh, yeah, bro.
Meanwhile, they're all sitting there like, between her fucking legs. What?
It's like the 40-year-old virgin whenever Steve Carell's character is trying to describe what it feels like to touch a boob, you know?
The bag of sand.
Bag of sand, yeah.
Which is...
She had her tits down between her legs, you know? You know, the four nipples on the one boob. It's like so sick, bro.
Meanwhile, like every Varl has seen a human female, they're just like, "What the fuck?
What?"
It's like as if that was the parts of the yaks that he would combine with human females when creating them. He wouldn't like make them.
I mean,
because of course the Varl are completely human, except for the fact they're huge and have horns.
Yeah, except for the horns. Yeah, exactly. Well, you don't know that. You haven't seen them under their clothes. You ain't never seen a naked Varl.
Fair enough. The big kind of traditionally heavy drinking Viking look is just an udder.
You got spots on their chest. Yeah. Big black and white spots.
Yes. Why do male Varl still have udders, dude? It doesn't make any sense. Anyway, this was a war. This was the vengeance war from the Dredge. That's why it was much, much more serious, and that's why they used the power of the Menders to create spells so terrible they were described as genocidal against the Dredge.
Yeah.
The
gods are gone already, or they're not gone yet?
They're gone.
They're gone already, okay.
Yeah, they die before the Second War.
Okay, cool.
Like I said, with like the gods dying, it didn't really have the apocalyptic effects that you would see in something like the OG God of War trilogy. Like, every time you kill a god in PlayStation, the PS3 Gods of War, the thing they represent goes wild. Like, there's floods and tsunamis when you kill Poseidon and shit like
that. You kill Helios and the sun just starts like wheeling through the sky, like, because the chariot is like run amok or whatever, right?
I
think it's on brand for this too, which is like, again, it starts like 5 days after the sun stops moving in the sky and like everyone realizes it's the end of the world, but it's like a slow death.
Yeah.
So like, I do love the idea that like, oh, the gods are all dead, but it's like, that is like a slow death too. Like, everything is just slow and wasting more than like this sudden apocalyptic event.
They stop being able to like grow beards and throw huge parties because the god of partying is dead.
Yeah. Not with a bang, but with a whimper is how our party ends.
Yeah, exactly. I would just, kind of true to life. But so anyway, to end this war, because it was a war of vengeance from the dredge, they were just like, nope, pulling out all the magic stops, tap into the weave, whatever, a weave nuke, loom a fucking nuke on there somehow, and kill them all. So the dredge were like believed to have all been killed, which is why they were like, maybe the members went too far.
I do remember that in the first game. They're like, it's like when the dredge show up, because I think the first couple fights, you're not fighting dredge, right? Like, you're fighting other humans and stuff, and people just trying to survive the end of the world. But then the first time the dredge show up, everyone's like, what? The dredge from fairy tales? Like, they're all dead or whatever. But the Varl specifically remember them because they were they were alive during the Second Great War, presumably. And
exactly.
They remember the dredge specifically. They're like, oh, no, those are definitely dredge. We thought they were all dead, but.
Which is why the living humans in game, other than the Menders, when they see the dredge, they're like, it's the dead returned to life as well. Yeah. So they're believed to be zombies, but it's exactly right. All the Varl living in game were created by the god before he died, which was before the Second War. So they were just like, I don't think so. I've been alive for 500 years, dude. Yeah. But some teenagers just like, that's bullshit, Varl,
those,
man.
Those aren't even real. You've never even seen a boob.
Neither of you. It's like, well, I can describe one.
Shut up, yeah, I have my girlfriend's from Mountain, Ontario.
Is Mountain, Ontario a real place?
It I have no idea, but one of my best friends growing up, not friend of the show Bobby, but I mean one of my best friends, my best friend growing up Bobby, different one, he went to camp one summer and he came back and said like, oh yeah, he had a girlfriend, she was from Mountain, Ontario, and nobody ever met her. And so, like, that's always my go-to, like, oh, yeah. Like, Mountain, Ontario also just sounds like the most made-up town name you've ever fucking heard in your life, right? So, I mean, it's just always perfect. That's my go-to, like, girlfriend lives in another town. She always lives in Mountain.
That's great. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's canon now as well. Yeah. So, but in this case here, your girlfriend would have to be from the furthest and most barren parts of Ontario, which in our world we call the Valkajökull. So, despite the... kind of political impact of using magic spells. The place where the Varl all disappeared was renamed after the Valka, which, like I said, are the most powerful menders at Mender School.
Where all the dredge disappeared, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You said Varl.
Oh, excuse me. Sorry. Yeah, the Valkajökull is where the dredge did it. So, minor character spoilers ahead here, just because this is very important to the lore and does happen before the game leading up to it, despite the fact you find out about it in the game. After kind of breaking some non-Great War related rules, Juno, which is one of the highest ranking Valka, was actually executed by the Mender Council. I'm not going to get into why, because it's a good character moment there, but Juno was executed by the Valka for breaking, what is the people in university in a dorm?
RAs?
Yeah, exactly. So the RAs found out you had broken the rules in your wizard dorm at wizard school, and they had Juno executed for that.
We said no posters.
Exactly. She put up a thing of like Backstreet Varl, like a bunch of sexy teenage Varl, and they had to pull that down.
That Joan Jett picture, not Joan Jett, Farrah Fawcett, a classic like Farrah Fawcett 70s poster, but it's a dredge or whatever.
Exactly. Sexy rock monster.
They're all sexy.
Don't let me forget that one.
Okay, I will write down Farrah Fawcett
dredge monster. Thank you. So grief-stricken, her lover Ivan, who again is one of the party members, went below the surface of the world to the underworld. This was actually the true home of the dredge, and the underworld had its own sun called the Dark Sun. So Ivan, using his weaving, use the power of the Dark Sun to revive Juno. So Juno is actually back from the dead when you meet her in-game.
Okay, this is like so... I don't know if this is deliberate writing or just like a funny coincidence in the writing, but the fact that people thought that the Dredge were just zombies, like returned to life or whatever, but then he's able to use the Dredge Sun to actually perform a necromantic ritual is like a weird, like, cool little connection there.
It's when you discover it, it's very cool because a lot of the environments up until this point in the game, I think it's Banner Saga 3, are very regular kind of European looking medieval
European
era
and snowy. Yeah,
exactly. But like when you go to the underworld, it's like a completely different fucking universe. And yeah, they do have a gigantic black sun underground. And this was a true home of the Dredge. So the subterranean monsters thing, real. Back from the dead, no.
Okay.
However, pulling the life force out of the Dark Sun caused it to crash down and release a corrupting magical force just referred to as the Darkness, as well as a gigantic snake who is living inside the Dark Sun and, like, gestating there, waiting to hatch. Like, what his true purpose was...
Yeah, that's all so cool.
Yeah, exactly.
That whole sentence you just said is so fucking cool. Like, it's like, the wizard, to bring back his dead wizard wife, taps the sun, which crashes to the ground, the subterranean sun, which crashes to the subterranean ground, breaks open like an egg, and it turns out it was an egg, and there was a snake inside of it. Like,
yeah.
Just all extremely cool.
He comes back, and he's very much, I guess he's kind of like Jormungandr. He's very much the apocalypse snake. His destiny, he talks to Juno, and I think he talks to a couple of other characters in-game. It's like he just tells them what he's there to do. So there's a bunch of earthquakes that kind of start midway through the first game. This is caused by the serpent kind of like tunneling out of the ground.
Okay.
And there's some pretty insane cutscenes with him where he speaks to Juno and they have like a fight. He kind of dies and comes back as a zombie later on too. So there's a bunch of crazy shit happening later on. Like you start as farmer discovers rock monsters are real to serpent fighting, zombie serpent fighting zombie wizard. Cause he battles Juno on multiple occasions and she was brought back to life from him.
Yeah.
When he was supposed to hatch and destroy and consume the Loom Mother's creation is unknown, or even who fucking created him. Maybe Strahd put him there when he created the Dredge to give them their own kind of evil sun too, but the regular sun that's locked in the sky doesn't get a chance to hatch.
You're saying evil again, but we have human wizards using genocidal magic to beat back these people who declared war because they were being hunted for sport, which I think is a fair justification for war.
That is fair, yeah.
Right? And now,
war. The first one, they were sent here by a god to sow chaos. So
and so they decided we're done being hunted for sport. Then they were wiped out by the most powerful magic that was declared a war crime. Like, they were mustard gassed death, right?
Yeah.
And then they said, okay, we're not going to do that anymore. After they say they're not going to do that anymore, one of the wizards who did it was tried was tried and executed. And then that wizard's husband was like, well, I'm going to steal their son, crash it to the ground, break it open to bring that woman back who did genocide them. Like, I don't know if they're the evil guys, you know?
I don't know if Juno participated in the second war. Okay. I can't guarantee it was her. It was non-war related crimes. So they got her on the tax fraud.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's Al Capone. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's how they got Juno. And like when the snake was supposed to hatch is unknown. It is there to destroy the world. It is the apocalypse serpent, mm-hmm. but it's not like what its intentions were, of course, because like no one was expecting someone to, you know, steal the sun from underground to bring their wife back.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
I don't know why you'd expect that.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, again, it's like we plan, it's more of the like tied my shoes together and fell down the stairs because I was paranoid I was going to be assassinated by the other gods thing. It's just like they weren't good at planning.
Yeah.
The darkness that seeps out of the sun, I wish they had a better name for this. It's just the darkness. It's some kind of like pseudo mutagenic magic that corrupts everything that it touches. So if you want to open the last image, you can see a corrupted Dredge and see the contrast between it and the first one there and describe that for the people.
Like a lot less, like the first one are they're robots and they're, they're very much like designed like robots in that they have a lot of symmetry and or as much as like a biological human as well or whatever, right? Like yeah. they have a certain natural symmetry to them. This is clearly like he's got one like super elongated arm. He's got more purple to him, or they've got more purple to them. They've got just like, yeah, their proportions are all wrong. Like one of their robot horns is out of whack. One of their robot arms is just like a massive log. They're just robots that have just like grown out of control, essentially.
One arm that clearly looks like a hammer is probably like an absorbed weapon into it, because this is one of the melee ones. Like the dredge, all of them get corrupted. So there's like corrupted, they're called warped. So there's warped stone singers, there's warped ranged units. This is a warped melee one sort of thing. It can warp other life too, like people and animals and everything. The darkness seeps out and mutates everything.
Okay.
This is revealed to be what caused the dredge to return. So after losing two wars, they were super content living underground with their sick, completely functional dark sun, until Ivan goes in to try and revive Juno with it.
Right.
Yeah. And that's it. That is, we're at year zero of the Banner Saga now. That is the fantastic, super concise lore of like some of my favorite turn-based dredge, favorite games, frankly. And yeah. So that's it. Yeah.
Yeah, super cool. I think we did a good job gushing about it at the top of the episode for the first 15 minutes. So
yeah.
I don't know if we need to again now, but I'll give it one final commendation. Just like if this sounds at all interesting to you, and if you check out the gameplay, if the gameplay looks like something you'd like, or if you like Final Fantasy Tactics or Fire Emblem or those kind of games, then absolutely check out the Banner Saga. It's fantastic. At least the first one was a great game. And I still got the store page open to the whole bundle. You save $44 for buying the Stoic bundle, Stoic edition bundle. So, I mean, it's still $80, but you save $40 because it's a value of $126.
Yeah, that's how they get you.
And that's Canada dollars too. So those are loonies.
But you're carrying a big sack.
Thanks for listening, everybody. If you guys like the show, please tell some people you know. We hit 1 million downloads recently, which is crazy. And it's all thanks to listeners like you telling your friends. We've never paid to advertise the show in any way whatsoever. So really that huge milestone for us is entirely thanks to all of you who have told somebody about the show and told them how you like it, why you like it, and what you like about it. So consider doing that. Also, reviews do help on your podcast app of choice or on Apple Podcasts. Consider leaving us a 5-star review or a 2-thumb-up review or whatever the rating metric might be. Go on IMDb, create us a page, and give us 10 out of 10 or something like that. I don't know how IMDb works. So thanks so much. It means the world that you guys still listen and that you guys like the show. It means a lot. Peter, what's going on with Instagram?
At Lore Boys Podcast on Instagram. Come check out the art. Send me messages. A lot of people have been sending us memes, which are generally pretty good. Everybody's got a pretty much the same algorithm as Jamie does. So sometimes I just get repeated posts sent to me, but I'm like, all right, we're all on the same wavelength. That's all good.
Yeah,
and sometimes somebody sends me a banger that I never would have seen, which is a lot of fun. Otherwise, hopefully you'll see some more of my comics soon. I have found myself with a lot more time on my hands, and I already finished the hard part, which is funny. Like the main inciting incident that took like weeks to finish, I finished when I still had a full-time job. So now I'm like, fuck, man. I just crank this fucking thing out in 3 weeks.
There you go, man.
Yeah, and then, Discord, everything linked below, everything important.
Yeah, check out the Discord. We've got a bunch of channels. People share memes. Jamie's always in. We do community nights now that run by one of our moderators.
One of one.
Yeah. We've got memes channels, we've got pet channels, we've got art channels, we got whatever kind of channels you could want. A lot of great people who will probably like a lot of the same things as you. If you've made it through this episode and listen regularly, it's going to be a lot of people who like the same kind of stuff as you. And of course, we do have Patreon. I mentioned it earlier this episode, but patreon.com/theloreboys, where you can kick in a few bucks to gain access to loser titles. Next week's episode was voted on by the patrons. So if you guys want to have a say in the occasional episode that gets made, you guys can check out our Patreon, patreon.com/theloreboys, where you can get more info on that. And of course, anybody who doesn't trust Patreon, we've always had Loreboys Prime, where we will be doing some wine and pottery nights. Now, for our Lore Boys Prime members, we'll be invited to a wine and pottery night. You have to bring wine, enough for yourself and enough for us. Of course, we're not bringing our own wine to the wine and pottery night, so you guys got to bring it for us. It's like, think of it as a votive offering to the gods, I guess, because you're going to bring the wine. You're going to potter yourself. What is the...
You throw pottery, I believe.
You're going to throw yourself? You're going to throw yourself an altar out of clay. we're going to kill and fire it. You're going to pour the wine onto the altar. And then we're going to give you a couple just like not... like, don't even worry about it. It's just gibberish, nonsense words. You're going to have to say... once you're done with that, it's nothing sinister, nothing too evil. None of us. Hey, listen to me. None of us here at the Lore Boys are trying to put snakes in the sun. Okay. That's there's a lot of rumors going around these days about the Lore Boys. Those are the guys that are trying to put snakes in the sun. Come on. Would we do that? Listen to us. Fake news. Would we do that? Yeah. Would we do that? Sure. We would.
I don't think it's even possible, frankly. I've been saying it's impossible, which is why you shouldn't be worried, is because not even all three of us are on board with the idea.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, and I mean, if one of us has mysteriously disappeared, then maybe you start to worry, you know what I mean? Yeah. But Jamie's fine. He's just, you know, he's on a train right now. He's on his way home. Everything's good. He's safe and sound. You don't have to worry about Jimbo, okay? Everything's good with him. No worries about Jimbo and snakes in the sun, okay?
We're not paranoid that we're just going to kill each other.
if you want to be a part of this momentous, just a regular old wine and pottery night, consider joining Lore Boys Prime. I think that would constitute a Lore Boys.
Lore Boys.
Out.
Out.
Lore 2 Boys.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.